You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 116, The Lay of Alvis. Alvis tramped all the way from the world of the Dark Elves to Asgard. He hurried towards Bilskirnir, and in that hall he saw the god he was looking for, but he did not recognize him. "I've come for my bride," the dwarf said bluntly. "It's taken long enough to get here, I must say, and now it's high time that Thrud graced her new home. Everyone will say I can't wait for my wedding night, but I don't mean to hang around here any longer than I have to."
"Who are you?" asked Thor. "Or should I say, what are you? Why is your nose so pale? Do you sleep in a grave mound and keep corpses company?"
Thor considered Alvis.
"You look like the head of a monster. You certainly wouldn't be the one to marry Thrud."
The dwarf drew himself up to his full height, such as it was.
"I am Alvis," he said, "and there's nothing I do not know. I live way down under a hill. My home is a cavern hewn out of rock."
Then the dwarf testily brushed aside this talk with a sweep of his hand.
"I've come to claim Thrud, the agreed price for my work and for many weapons. Let the gods not break their oath."
"I'll break it," said Thor indignantly. "I knew nothing of this promise."
He stalked down the hall and then called out,
"A father has the last word as to whom his daughter marries. It's up to him and him alone." "So who are you then, hero?" demanded Alvis. "And what kind of right do you think you have over my radiant bride? You're nothing but some vagabond, seldom noticed, little known."
The corners of Alvis's mouth twitched.
"Which woman had to be bought with rings before she would bear you?"
"I," said the god very slowly, and his eyes flashed so that Alvis began to quail, "am Thor the Hurler. I am the Wide Wanderer, and I am Odin's son. You'll never win and marry my daughter if I can help it."
"Ah,"
said Alvis, and he smiled a pallid smile.
"Well, I'll soon win your goodwill and your consent. I long for your snow-white daughter, and I'll struggle for her."
"Wise guest," said Thor, "I wouldn't be able to stand in the way of your love if you can answer whatever I ask you about all the worlds. Tell me, Alvis, you're the dwarf who knows everything about our fates and fortunes. What is the name for the land that stretches all around us in each and every world?"
"Men call it Earth," the dwarf replied. "The Aesir say field, and the Vanir say the ways. The giants name it Evergreen, and the elves Grower. The most holy gods call it clay."
"Tell me, Alvis, you're the dwarf who knows everything about our fates and fortunes. What is the name for the sky, child of the ocean, that we all see in each and every world?"
"Men call it heaven," the dwarf replied. "The gods say the height, and the Vanir say Windweaver. The giants call it high home, and the elves fair roof, and the dwarves dripping hall."
"Tell me, Alvis, you're the dwarf who knows everything about our fates and fortunes. What is the name for the moon that we can all see in each and every world?"
"Men call it the moon," the dwarf replied, "but the gods say mock sun. It's known in hell as whirling wheel. The giants name it rapid traveler, the dwarves gleamer, and the elves time teller."
"Tell me, Alvis, you're the dwarf who knows everything about our fates and fortunes. What is the name for the sun that we can all see in each and every world?"
"Men call it sun," the dwarf replied. "The gods say orb, and the dwarves Dvalin's delight. The giants name it everbright, the elves fair wheel, and the sons of God all glowing."
Tell me, Alvis. You're the dwarf who knows everything about our fates and fortunes. What is the name for the clouds that hold the rain in each and every world?
Men call them clouds, the dwarf replied. The gods say chance of showers, and the Vanir say wind kites. The giants named them hope of rain, the elves weather might, and in Hel they're known as helmets of secrets.
Tell me, Alvis, you're the dwarf who knows everything about our fates and fortunes. What is the name for the wind that ranges far and wide in each and every world?
Men call it wind, the dwarf replied. The gods say waverer, and the most holy gods call it neyer. The giants name it wailer. The elves, roaring traveler, and in Hel it's known as blustering blast.
Tell me, Alvis, you're the dwarf who knows everything about our fates and fortunes. What is the name for the stillness, the settling peace in each and every world?
Men call it calm, the dwarf replied. The gods say the quiet, and the Vanir say winds hush. The giants name it the sultry, and the elves day's lull, and the dwarfs day's refuge.
Tell me, Alvis, you're the dwarf who knows everything about our fates and fortunes. What is the name for the sea on which men sail in each and every world?
Men call it the sea, the dwarf replied. The gods say smooth-lying, and the Vanir say waves. The giants name it Eelholm. The elves drink stuff, and the dwarfs call it the deep.
Tell me, Alvis, you're the dwarf who knows everything about our fates and fortunes. What is the name for fire that burns for men in each and every world?
Men call it fire, the dwarf replied. The gods say flame, and the Vanir say wave. The giants name it hungry biter, and the dwarfs burner. In Hel it's known as the hasty.
Tell us, Alvis, you're the dwarf who knows everything about our fates and fortunes. What is the name for the wood that grows for men in each and every world?
Men call it wood, the dwarf replied.
The gods say mane of the field, and in Hel it's known as seaweed of the hills. The giants name it fuel, and the elves fair-limbed. The Vanir call it wand. Tell me, Alvis, you're the dwarf who knows everything about our fates and fortunes. What is the name for the night, daughter of Narvi in each and every world?
Men call it night, the dwarf replied. The gods say darkness, and the most holy gods say hood.
The giants name it lightless, and the elves sleep soothing, and the dwarves the weaver of dreams. Tell me, Alvis, you're the dwarf who knows everything about our fates and fortunes. What is the name for the seed sown by men in each and every world?
Men call it barley, the dwarf replied. The gods say grain, and the Vanir say growth. The giants name it edible. The elves drink grist, and in Hel it's known as slender stem.
Tell me, Alvis, you're the dwarf who knows everything about our fates and fortunes. What is the name for ale that men quaff in each and every world?
Men call it ale, the dwarf replied. The gods say beer, and the Vanir say foaming. The giants name it cloudless swill, and in Hel it's known as mead.
Suttung's sons call it feast rot.
Thor said, I've never known one person to be the mine of so much ancient wisdom. He smiled at his guest, a long, slow smile, and he slowly nodded his head. But your own tongue has trapped you, Alvis. The sun's rays arrest you. The dwarf whirled around, but it was already too late.
The sun's rays arrest you, gloated Thor, and they turn you into stone. And now the sun shines in my hall once again.
So I find this to be a really interesting story.
And not just because of the predictable Elvis jokes that you can make as a result of that, such as Elvis becoming a hunk of burning love when the sun comes up. but seriously, this is not what I would call an exciting story. I mean, Thor doesn't even hit anything in the story. But this story is all about the words. This is a piece of skaldic poetry, which is all about the use of the words, the use of the language, the sound of the language. I would have loved to hear this told by an actual skald. And maybe someday I'll have my chance to do that if I ever go to Iceland or something. But the way that language is used in this and the repetition, it's almost like waves coming over you. And I know I've talked about this in other stories that we've talked about, but the Norse had a very keen sensibility of the rhythm of language. And repetition is an important part of a lot of these Norse myths. And we've had this happen in a few of the other stories that we've told before. We have it in the Song of Rig, which is one that we haven't covered yet, but something that we'll be covering in the not-too-distant future. So again, like the last story that we had, it's not an action-packed epic of fighting and good versus evil and high stakes, but basically Thor tricking a dwarf into being frozen by the sun into stone. I like the fact that Alvis, despite the fact that he knows all about the earth, he knows all about the fates and the fortunes of men, didn't recognize Thor. That's kind of an interesting point. And I think that has to do with the fact that Thor doesn't look particularly godlike. He's kind of a rustic character. He's not one of these effete glowing beings like Baldur. And he's not it's kind of a sinister caricature in the same way that Loki is. And he's not sort of the regal ruler, the one-eyed king that Odin is. Thor is a rough-and-tumble kind of god. And I think that had a lot to do with Thor's popularity back in the day. He's a very relatable character. He's more like a real person than the other gods. And even if he's not hitting something, he's not really a dimwit. I mean, he came up with a pretty simple plan, but it's kind of a clever plan as well. Thor is often portrayed as being kind of dim, and almost as much in the comics as he is in the myths. And here's an example of Thor being clever, so I kind of like that. And the one last point that I wanted to make about the story, and another point of this that I think is really fascinating, is how all of the worlds seem to be set up exactly the same way. They all have the moon, they all have ale, they all have the wind, they all have fire, they all have wood. And I find that immensely appealing, and I'm sure that probably ancient Norse people did too. The kingdom of the gods, after all, is not so different from the real lives that these Norse people lived. And I could see that they would be very drawn to that, and to identify with that in their own daily lives. All right, so anyway, we do have a issue of Thor to cover. In fact, it's an extra long issue of Thor, being the Thor annual. So let's go ahead and move on with our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold
So as advertised this week, we are looking at the 1999 Thor Annual. I have to call it that because there actually isn't a number on it, but it is the 1999 Thor Annual and has a March of 1999 cover date, which means that it came out about the same time as Thor number 9, which of course was in the middle of the Dark Gods saga. So despite that fact, this actually takes place before the Dark Gods saga at some unspecified point in the past, although according to the cover, it is from the pages of The Heroes Reborn, The Return, so probably predates Thor number 1 of this series, if you want to talk about absolute chronological order, which I don't. So, beautiful cover here. It's by Dan Jurgens and Claus Johnson. The front cover, and it's a wraparound cover, shows Thor in a kind of generic Kirby-esque pose with a little bit of awkward foreshortening there. of Thor swinging his hammer around and kind of leaping out at the viewer. And behind him, there's this weird metallic sort of thing, which looks almost like a hand. And of course, that is a hand. You wrap around to the back cover and you see the face of the person whose hand it belongs to. And it, of course, is the giant face of Doctor Doom. Looking very, very good, I have to say. Nice, nice cover here by Juergens and Johnson. We open up to the splash page where we see Thor flying through the air, and he's on some sort of a view screen, and we hear voices, and the voices are saying, "Perimeter scanners have acquired and identified this target as authentic. It's definitely him."
"Sheesh, you need a lab full of fancy gizmos to tell you that? All you gotta do is take a look at the mug. Who else could it be but Thor?"
And Thor is a logo, which means that this person talks in logos, so he deserves diarrhea for a year. We have Stan Lee Presents Tears of a God. And this story was written by Dan Juergens, who also drew the story this time. Hooray! Claus Johnson was the inker. Mark Bernardo was the colorist. Richard Starkings of Comic Craft was the letterer. Tom Brevoort was the editor. And Bob Harris was the editor-in-chief. We get a few clues as to where Thor's going. He lands on a rooftop and we see a big number 4. Gee, I wonder what that means. The fact that Dr. Doom is on the cover would give you a clue, I would dare say. So we're still hearing the voices of, you know, talking about Thor, but we're not seeing Thor himself speak. And they're kind of whispering or something. Anyway, it's like, yep. That's definitely the God of Thunder, all right.
Nothing gets by you, does it, Hotshot?
One more word out of you, and I'll dump you in my rock polisher.
Yeah, you and whose Galactic Imperial Army?
Will you boys please quiet down? If he hears you, we'll never coax him inside.
Indeed. Even as we speak, our guest strides through the comprehensive genetic and retina scanning defense apparatus.
Jeez-o-beezo! Can't you call it a door like anyone else?
Hush, he's spotted the light. He's coming this way.
He's suspicious. Since we haven't revealed ourselves, the big man hears a trap.
And Thor is indeed a little bit suspicious as he's kind of stalking towards the entrance in a menacing way. And he leaps through the door, says, "Stand ye back, villain. Let it be known far and wide that whose would harm the friends and allies of Thor shall suffer the wrath of his anger unleashed." And the people inside yell, "Surprise!" It is a surprise party. We go to the next page and we see who these party people are. It's, of course, the Fantastic Four. We have Johnny Storm, a.k.a. the Human Torch, Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, Sue Storm Richards, the Invisible Woman, Ben Grimm, the Thing, and, of course, we have the mascot of the Fantastic Four, young Franklin Richards, who, unbelievably, is one of the few kid characters in comics that I don't find annoying. I suppose it depends on how he's written. He was really annoying sometimes in Power Pack, but generally in the Fantastic Four, I don't find him that annoying. Anyway, so what manner of treachery transpires here? Why didst the Fantastic Four seek to deceive the God of Thunder?
Haven't you ever heard of a surprise party? Says Johnny.
Perhaps not, Johnny. The customs of Asgard are most certainly far different from our own.
Ain't everybody that's lucky enough to experience the joys and foibles of Yancey Street.
It's overdue, but this is our way of thanking you, Thor.
Yeah, if not for you, I might have been Dr. Doom's prisoner for life.
So they're referencing a story here that I haven't read, which apparently happens in Heroes Reborn. We'll get a few details of what is going on, but basically it sounds like Dr. Doom tried to kidnap Franklin Richards, okay? So that's really all you need to know.
Frank, it's right. Thor, you saved my son's life, says Mr. Fantastic.
And for that, you'll have our eternal gratitude.
Thou art kindness come to life, m'lady Susan. 'Tis naught but the solemn duty of Thor to respond when innocent life stands threatened. A sentiment we ourselves share. Nevertheless, Von Doom nearly absconded with Franklin. The memory of that day still chills me to my marrow.
A little bit overly dramatic, don't you think, Reed?
Aye, Dr. Richards. I, too, recall it well.
And we get a little bit of a flashback here, and we see Thor has grabbed Dr. Doom around the neck. He's kind of in kind of a one-arm choke hold, and Doom's trying to get away. And they're flying through the some sort of Kirby space here, and Thor is whirling his hammer around, and some sort of a dimensional rift is opening. It doesn't look like his normal Ajax White Tornado, but who knows what's going on here. But anyway, Thor is narrating here.
after ye had taken safe possession of thy child. I did realize that there were but one way to ensure thy escape. Doom needed to be removed. Thus did I spin mine Uru hammer, mighty Mjolnir, until dimensional energies were trapped, and a rift in between realities was created. And if I am to spend eternity battling you to maintain the safety of two realities, then that is an eternity well spent. Or to use thine own words, so be it. And this big kind of fiery lightning kind of strikes them, and Mjolnir apparently has transported them somewhere. We see Doom is not real happy with this. His armor is glowing with the kind of red and yellow Kirby Crackle here. Not to say, his Kirby Crackle is not as good as Johnny Romita Jr.'s. But anyway, so Doom is like emitting all this energy and is kind of repelling Thor. And Dr. Doom is like, "You dare presume yourself a god? You who waste your birthright on the likes of them. To squander such power is a crime against the universe itself. Know you well that though I am mortal, because I strive to be more, I am your superior in every way." And there's another big energy outburst, and the two of them vanish. We then cut back to the Baxter Building, and the Fantastic Four is listening to Thor's story. And Reed Richards says, "All of that would have occurred in a few moments' time, yet you didn't arrive on Earth for weeks." "Aye, Dr. Richards. Weeks that are still a mystery to me."
"Wow, is that what they call amnesia, Mommy?"
"Amnesia, Franklin."
Because it's funny when little kids make mistakes, right?
"If that mook Doom ain't the biggest stick to ever get stuck in the bicycle spokes of life, then I don't know who is. We was worried about you, Goldilocks. Stretcho here was obsessed."
"True enough. I couldn't rest until I found the man that returned Franklin to his proper home."
"Don't I know it. The rubber band man here was so consumed with finding you that his cosmic doohickey detected devices poured out of every lab into every room we had."
And you have a little scene of Reed inconveniencing everybody with his devices. And Reed asks Thor what happened to Von Doom, what happened to him, and Thor says, "Sadly, it is unknown to me. The entire affair is clouded in mystery and blackness. I have long pondered on those lost days to no avail."
"Wow, Mr. Thor, that sounds really creepy."
"You ultimately returned to Earth. Now?"
"'Twas not on fair Midgard that Thor did awaken, but once glorious Asgard. Alas, there did I discover that my once proud home was in shambles. The realm Eternal was destroyed, and all within her golden walls gone. Ever since I have dwelled daily, not only on Asgard's black fate."
And, yeah, of course, that harkens back to the events that took place prior to Thor number one, while the heroes of Earth were missing. And, Thor is explaining how he came to encounter Dr. Doom and the Fantastic Four as he was trying to kidnap Franklin away. And Thor narrates here,
"'Twas the passing events of that day which ultimately cast me into the grips of Doom. The assembled defenders of mankind were trapped in a universe not of our making."
Well, did he make this universe either? I don't think so.
"We thought our return ensured, until the cad grabbed thine innocent son."
Oh, the indignity, that cad!
Oh.
"For honor eternal, for Asgard immortal, did I strike a Doom, allowing ye the chance to rescue thine offspring."
And we get a reference here back to the Heroes Reborn, whatever series that was. And a nice shot here of Dr. Doom grabbing Franklin away and subsequently having to release him to Mr. Fantastic. I kind of like the way that this panel here is structured. It's a two-page spread, but we actually have, it looks almost like there are two Dr. Dooms and two Franklins. And just the way that the panels flow into each other is the only reason why you know it's, you have to actually use your mind a little bit to realize they're not two of them. So anyway, Thor is rescuing Franklin from Dr. Doom, and Sue Richards is like,
"A gesture we've yet to adequately thank you for, Franklin."
And Franklin is offering Thor a box wrapped in a really ugly wrapping paper, which is a pale blue with white number fours all over it. I imagine he probably made it himself.
"Here, Mr. Thor, I made it myself."
"Dost thou seek to extract a tear from the son of Odin?"
Yeah, drama queen.
"Never has such a boon of kindness been extended to Thor."
So, yeah, he's never gotten a thank you gift before? I don't think so. And the thing is touched as well. He says,
I swear, it's enough to make an uncle proud.
Yeah, so long as he doesn't take after you, Franklin will grow up fine, says the Human Torch. One of these days, Johnny boy. One of these days.
Reed Richards is curious here.
A query, Thor. Thanks to your timely intervention, we returned to the proper universe within minutes. Yet you didn't arrive for some time.
Yeah, you already said that.
Hast thou pondered long the ways and motives of Doom, Dr. Richards? If so, then thou would surely know of his unbridled fury when his plans were thwarted.
And we shift scenes to an alien planet, and I think it's Tatooine, because it has two suns, and it's a desert, and there's a person dressed like a sand person, a Tusken Raider almost, kind of stalking across this alkali desert sort of looking thing, trailing dust, and this person finds Thor, and Thor is just kind of laying there. Basically, this person finds him, and Thor narrates a little bit more here.
On the missing days of Thor as well. Whatever great adventure ensnared the God of Thunder, whatever beings I did encounter, whatever justice I might have imposed, whatever evil I might have vanquished, seems destined to be eternally forgotten, lost in the smoky abyss of time.
And we see that this like Tusken Raider-dressed person, they find Thor, they tie him to a sledge, and basically they drag him back to their hovel, and we see the inside of the hovel and Thor laying in like a cot, bunk bed sort of thing. And it's a beautiful interior here. It's, you know, very well appointed room, I guess you could say. And there's a young woman who is attending Thor. And as Thor regains consciousness, we have a conversation here going on between the two of them.
At last, I was beginning to wonder if you'd ever wake up. As though you've been out of it for 3 days, stranger. I'm Saranda, your sole caregiver, since I found you at the bottom of the Rust Caverns.
Thou art not of Midgard. Pray thee tell, where doth Thor find himself?
Nice to finally know your name, Thor. Your appearance and name suggest that you are not native to the Balatron system of worlds.
I say thee nay. Though the details are unknown to me, 'twas a paranormal phenomenon which deposited the son of Odin here.
Do you always refer to yourself in the third person?
She has kind of an annoyed look on her face.
Thy kindness hath earned the gratitude of Thor forever. Though I must now ask, didst ye find me with another?
Sorry, Blondie. You were as alone can be. Why?
She has this weird earth slang here that I don't know about.
'Tis another, named Doom, and all the evil machinations he doth inspire. That weighs heavily upon the mind of Thor, Saranda. If the cursed scourge is not at my side, then he...
And Thor's feeling dizzy here, and she's like,
lay down. I knew it was too soon for you to stand.
And with that, Thor falls down. Looks like he's banging his head on the floor. We shift scenes, and we're still on that alien world with the two suns, a.k.a. Tatooine. And see, like, I don't know, like an underground city here. And we have a little bit of narration here, and you can tell it's Dr. Doom because it's green, and because it's green, you know that he's evil. And Dr. Doom was saying,
it has taken days to concoct a functioning scanning device out of my nearly powerless armor. The surface of this world is deserted, save for a few access stations that dot the desolate landscape. The world's interior is quite the opposite. Here lies the home of its population, somewhat more advanced than one finds on Earth. Eventually, their people will come. At present, my mind is occupied by other matters. The Asgardian. He is on the surface. Normally a favorable development. Now, however, I have need of him and his dimension-spanning hammer. The so-called God of Thunder is my surest way home, since my armor was severely damaged by the forces which carried us here.
And here's some alien language, and... You know, Dr. Doom, I guess, turns on this translator in his armor. And it looks like they're sentries of some kind of guards. And they're dressed in, like, RoboCop armor. That's basically what it looks like. And for 1999, that's probably appropriate. And they have guns and things, but they don't seem to be too threatening. It's in them.
Timuraz indicated a stranger nearby. Identify yourself.
Offensive, pug. I'll allow the fool to think he has the upper hand while I discern their capabilities. Soon enough, I will crush them all. I am Von Doom. I come in peace.
And we shift scenes back to Salandra's hovel. And Thor has once again regained consciousness. And they're kind of chit-chatting here.
"'Twould seem more time hath passed, Milady Saranda."
"Less than a full cycle, but time doesn't mean much to me. Not when I'm so alone. I used to live under with the rest of the world's populace, but I was banished for delving into the arts of sorcery. If that bothers you..."
"Nay, for Thor is the acquaintance of many a mystic, both good and evil. Stand ye back, as 'tis time I take my leave, for the comrades of Thor surely await his return on Midgard, as well as in the fabled halls of Asgard. Let the power of enchanted Mjolnir pierce the dimensions, and return me whence I came anon." And he starts to whirl the hammer around, but he's kind of deflected by an energy sphere of some kind, and goes, "Strat!" And Thor's like, "By the bristling beard of Odin!"
"Unexpected results?"
"No force, no dimensional barrier can withstand the power of my Uru hammer. 'Twas fashioned by the Allfather Odin himself to grant Thor powers and abilities beyond those of mortal man," very Superman-like there, "and fellow god alike. It is written, 'Whosoever holdeth this hammer, if he be worthy, shall possess the power of Thor.'" And we actually see that appear on the side of the hammer, which is kind of cool. "Yet now it fails its master's command. Such a consequence is impossible, unless the evil intent of Doom be involved." And we get a little bit more of this scene of Doom. And he has sensors, I guess, in his armor that detect Thor. He says, "A glance at my sensors tell me he is still here. Why?
Is he injured?"
"More likely he is searching for me."
Of course.
"He and his kind are forever unable to fathom the motives and actions of Victor von Doom."
And we see Dr. Doom is being herded into, jail? I don't know where.
"To the laboratory with you. March!"
And Doom, I guess, is going with them willingly to this laboratory, which is full of Jack Kirby-inspired devices. And the guards are saying, "After a period of study, our scientists will determine your suitability for the melding. To join the society is the ultimate."
"For one of your limited intellect and myopic vision, perhaps. But I am Doom, and my superiority is beyond contention."
And he grabs a cable from one of the machines and drives it into the chest piece of his armor. Because, you know what kind of energy is going through there, and you know what it can do, right? So Doom is being very reckless here. And the guards are speaking the obvious here.
"He's grabbed an energy induction cable. It's suicide." "Pitiful, small-minded cretin. My armor must be recharged if I am to claim your inferior community and make you all my subjects. For command and control are the ways of Doom." And he's kind of sending off all these shockwaves of energy, and he blasts the guards, and I guess they're dead or unconscious, whatever they are. Anyway, they go falling back. Nice Kirby crackle here in this panel, like energy blast coming out from Dr. Doom's glove. It's kind of cool looking. I'm really liking the colors here in this issue so far, and I might talk about that a little bit later. "Even over the one with the temerity to call himself a god."
And he kind of pictures Thor in his mind's eye. And we shift back to Thor, speaking of which, and he is outside of Salandra's hovel. I guess it's nighttime, so that, you know, the stars in the sky and the two suns are not there. And Salandra's saying,
"This is a morning to live for, Thor. Why the sad face?"
"As I have attempted every day since my arrival, so did I try once more to return to my beloved Asgard."
"The barrier?"
"Aye. Impenetrable as always. 'Tis apparent that I shall be forever trapped here. Never again to enjoy the surroundings of my birth, or those of Midgard."
"I know you're frustrated."
"Oh my.
But this isn't such a bad place. I've managed to make a good life of it. And, well, we're becoming something of a team, don't you think?" As she flirts with Thor.
"In my mind, mayhaps, though such thoughts be far distant from Thor. Ne'er before hath mighty Mjolnir failed to serve me. Verily, 'tis that which alarms me most."
One of the things about this panel here is a really, really bad, wonky, nasty, bad picture of Mjolnir here. Bad, bad, bad. I mean, that's bad even if you consider it to be Kirby perspective, which it kind of does look like.
"Thor, I'm sorry that you're so miserable with me, but I'm stuck here too, and I'm determined to make the most of it. You'll just have to do the same. Bom chicka bom bom.
Nay, Milady Salandra, I am warrior born and avenger, pledged to the well-being of Midgard. Should I awaken here tomorrow or 10 years hence, still shall I exhaust all efforts to return home.
Fine, whatever you say. In the meantime, why don't you stop being such a fussy grump and help me with the planting? Oh, yeah.
Fussy grump? Rarely hath the god of thunder been addressed thus. He actually looks kind of amused, though, by that.
Too bad. Might help you loosen up. Bow, chicka, bow, bow.
We have a scene here, full page panel here, of Thor lifting heavy rocks, helping Salandra plant crops of some kind in this desolate area that shows no sign of crops. And we have Thor causing a rainstorm to happen. So I guess crops can grow if he creates lots of thunderstorms, I suppose. And we see the plants growing, and we see that Thor and Salander are becoming close. In the meantime, we hear the voice of Victor Von Doom narrating this.
The Asgardians' action continue to intrigue me. My instruments reveal him to still be on the surface. Either he cannot leave, or the other life form I've detected is keeping him here. Additionally, my sensors reveal seismic disturbances, as if though he were prepping the surface for a purpose such as farming. And the rains, so unnatural to an arid planet such as this, can only be the result of his actions. My conclusion, the Avenger has become involved. Rather than fight his way off this decrepit rock, he's found someone who needs him. Someone to play a hero for. Someone to divert him. But now is not the time to dwell on whatever sophomoric relationship the Avenger is cultivating. Doom's moment has come.
And we shift scenes to Doom. And he's in still in the laboratory, and he's like, looks like he's being blasted by these sort of fire beams. I gather that's not really what's happening here. Maybe they're charging his armor, which would make sense. But anyway. So he's walking around in this laboratory. Says, now that my armor is fully repaired and its defensive and offensive capabilities are fully operational, nothing can stop me. Behind this door, their ruling council, or what was formerly their ruling council, and Doom bursts in the door, and the ruling council are dressed in, this one guy looks like he's wearing a sweater vest. And it's like, who dares?
You have no permission to be here.
Permission? Doom requires permission from no one.
And he shoots energy beams all around and is shocking all the people. And they're going, argh! And the energy is going, shkick-chick-crick.
This world and its people are now mine. Should they wish to live out their pitiful lives, they will serve the interests of Doom against the Avenger.
And we see the close-up here of Doom's eyes. He's all evil-looking. Yeah, Doom is pretty much the villainous villain here. And we shift back to Thor and Salandra, and it looks like Salandra is sleeping here, and Thor is sitting next to the fire. They have like a, I don't know what it looks like, a bathtub with a fire in it. But it has a vent thing on the top, so it actually does kind of look like a cooking fire. I don't know. It looks like a fireplace. And we still get some narration here from Doom.
Though I hardly consider him worthy of the power he wields, I must still respect it. The attack must be launched when his defenses are down, when doubtless he is lost in thoughts of Earth, and now he's foolishly devoted himself to the interests of man rather than the pursuits of a god. His is an agenda beyond my capability to comprehend.
And Thor is startled by the cry of somebody yelling, Avenger! And Thor leaps up. He says,
Yon voice! 'Twould seem to be carried by the wind itself. And since it didst address Thor as Avenger, there can be little doubt that 'tis the summons of Doom.
And Thor comes out of the hovel, and there's all these guards and shit around. They're on their kind of flying platforms and that kind of thing. And there's a whole bunch of these RoboCop-looking guards hanging around. And Thor's not taking this lying down. I mean, he's being kind of threatening here.
Bring allies a many, even the multitudes of every soldier thou might find. But know thee well, that still will Thor vanquish thee.
And Doom is there in the middle of them all on his own little flying platform thingy. And he's like,
Silence, Avenger. 'Tis not a battle I'm interested in. Doom must return to Earth, to Latveria, and I need your power to get me there. Not that I expect you to willingly comply. And he unveils his kind of glowing Kirby machine, like a illusion behind him. Over 3 million people dwell beneath the surface. I've built a device filled with a poisonous compound that will kill them within moments unless you cooperate. Dr. Doom is too villainous for villain's sake, isn't he? Thou art mad! For Thor to act in league with one such as thee is unthinkable. Begone, Doom. Truly, thou art less than human. Your hammer, Avenger. Employ it to send me to Earth, and no one needs suffer. Have a care, Doom. For if it be the power of Mjolnir thou dost request, 'tis the unbridled power of Mjolnir thou shalt have. And he shoots the fire out of Mjolnir, as he's done several times recently in the past, and with a shkow, just blasts Dr. Doom with a shkricht. And we get a little bit of narration here from Doom. Precisely the brash response I expected. Thor is getting ready to fight all these guards things, and Thor's like, "Get thee gone, underlings. Thor has no desire to harm the likes of thee." And the guards are like, "He's only one man. For the sake of our people, fire!" And they're firing at him, but Thor is kind of easily deflecting their bullets or whatever the hell they're shooting at him by whirling his hammer about. And Thor is saying, "Doom forces thee to serve him, lest he exterminate thy loved ones. Thor doth sympathize with thy plight, and will act accordingly." Doom is made all angry by this. He says, "Your impudence has ensured the death of millions, Avenger. I release the gas." "No!" Thor is all angry about that. Says, "I say thee nay! Wherever evil wouldst pray, wherever the innocent might be victimized, there too shall Thor be, to battle the forces of darkness, for honor, for glory, for justice, and Asgard eternal." And he hammers at the ground with a brack-a-bram and smashes the ground open. And of course, they're just very conveniently right above the laboratory where this gas globe is. How coincidental is that, you think? And Thor drops straight down into this chamber. "Yon device, a carrier of mass death, can only be the product of a soul drowning in the abyss of evil. Though the brilliance of Doom's inventions be acknowledged by minds as fine as Pym's and Richard's, 'tis a genius twisted by madness into something black and foul." Thor appears to be looking for a way to deactivate this device. "'Twould be tempting to unleash the power of my enchanted Uru Mallet against its shell. But such an action might only serve to release the compound within." Yeah, you think? "Instead, I must destroy this highly charged power conduit to disable the device. That, this threat, is ended now." And so, yeah, so he unplugs it, basically, and the gas globe can't release its energy, and the globe goes dark. And all the people are like, "The stranger did it! We're saved!" "Ah, the cries of life are most pleasing to my ears. Yet I'm greatly disturbed by the ease of my mission." Yeah, it seemed a little bit too easy here. "It's almost as if, Hela's kiss!" He sees Doom is lying on the ground here, and is kind of unconscious or whatever. "While driven by the need to save innocence beneath the surface, Doom's easy defeat seemed an advantage. Mayhap, too easy." And he sees that Doom is unconscious, and he decides to take Doom's mask off, and he does and finds that it's not Doom. Which, now, this is interesting, because how would Thor know this was Doom or not? He's never seen Doom's face. I mean, other than Reed Richards, maybe. Who has? So how does he know it's not Doom? Anyway, he doesn't. He apparently knows it's not Doom. So, "Still, must I remove thy mask, villain? I may not recognize thy true visage, but I know enough to be certain that thou art not Doom, but a stand-in. Reveal thyself, villain! 'Tis time for the final battle come." The door opens of the hovel, and we see Solandra standing there, and her clothes are all ripped up, and it looks like she's smoking. So that's as though she was on fire. And Thor is looking at her, big wide-eyed aghastness. He's, "Surrender! By the infinite power of Odin himself, I swear to thee that Doom shall pay the price of life itself for his actions."
And we see an image of Doom glowing in the background. Is it an image or is it him just glowing? It could be just him glowing, like glowing with energy and getting ready to blast, explode, or whatever he does. Cease your phony bravado, Avenger. Curse me all you want. Curse me if you will. But if truth be known, you should kneel and thank me. And Surrender's like, please do not tell him. I have freed you, Avenger. Now that I have defeated this witch, you may at last depart this barren world. And Saranda falls into Thor's arms and says, please, beloved, ignore his venomous worm. Foolish mortal, thou wouldst know far better than to court the fury and rage of Thor. How dare you speak with such contempt when you are so far beneath me? I now say thee this, Doom. Yield to the might of Mjolnir or die. And he flings Mjolnir at this glowing Dr. Doom. But the hammer passes right through him, as indeed this is an illusion, which he probably should have been able to tell, since it looks like he's transparent. If your infantile temper tantrum was ignited by being deceived, I suggest you not blame me. The woman is the one who deserves your wrath. Thy words are meaningless to Thor, Thor snarls. Act your station, Thunder God. Are you truly so dense that the truth still evades you? Saranda's a vile, treacherous sorceress, Avenger. Years ago she lived beneath the surface of this world, the last practitioner of the black arts amid the technological people. The mystic ways are forbidden there, and she was exiled from the city. Here, and the constant meteor showers and relentless heat, she withered from loneliness and misery. Recently, though, while using her talents to peer beyond the limits of this world, she saw us battling within the void. Your hammer did not bring us here. She did. And before you regained consciousness, she manipulated the inner magics of your Uru mallet, making it impossible for you to leave. And ensnaring me as well. And they show Saranda doing all this stuff, and she's got this sort of half-evil look on her face. And Thor is in denial here. He says, nay, cease these perfidious lies. Thou seekest to deceive Thor in hopes that I shall return thee to Earth. Hardly. Doom solves his problems alone. Thanks to my mother, I am well acquainted with sorcery myself, Avenger. I've stripped Saranda of her power and combined it with my own. I now have everything I need to go forth and reclaim my destiny. Farewell, fool. May we not meet again. And the image of Dr. Doom kind of whirls away like a comet, and leaving Thor here with the unconscious Saranda, and he's trying to rouse her a little bit here.
M'lady, what sayest thou? Surely Doom did speak falsehoods.
And she's like, I wish it were so, beloved.
Then thou art responsible for bringing me here?
I never wanted you to find out, but while you were gone, Doom did as he claimed. My injuries are most severe.
Thor doth carry not only the skills of a warrior, but also those of a physician.
It's too late. There is only one time for an apologies, and hopefully forgiveness. I was lonely, beloved. So lonely that when I saw you, I had...
And she's falling unconscious. And Thor says,
rest, m'lady.
Soon enough I shall. But first, a pledge of love for you.
Saranda.
And enough power for one final spell. Leave this world, and you will forget me, Thor. Suffer not the pain of my memory, or...
And with that, she collapses, and Saranda is dead. And Thor's leaning over Saranda, going, ooh-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. And we shift scenes back to Earth and Fantastic Four headquarters at the Baxter Building. Johnny's like,
hey, wake up, big guy. You've always been a bit tightly wrapped kind of guy, but you seem more subdued than usual today.
'Tis most difficult to explain, Johnny Storm, but a feeling of sadness, of most tragic loss, doth leave me heavy of heart.
No wonder. Losing your whole blamed hometown and family will do that.
Aye. Though it would almost seem that there's more.
If only we knew more of what happened to Doom, says Dr. Richards. I dislike not knowing where the threat of his magnitude might be found.
Should he reappear,
Knowest ye all that Thor shall smite him down? And Dr. Richards is pouring out what looks like a root beer out of one of his Kirby machines, which is kind of nifty. It's like this great big huge machine. It's like a root beer dispenser. So the Invisible Girl's like, fine, so long as you know that we owe you. And she kisses Thor on the cheek, and Thor seems a little bit surprised. And Franco is still there, and he's like,
hey, Mr. Thor, you still haven't opened the present I made.
An oversight I'll perpetuate no longer, young Franklin. And Thor rips open the box with a shrip. 'Tis rarity itself that the God of Thunder doth receive gifts from one as noble as thee. And he pulls out this big blue, looks like plastic hammer. It's like in the shape of a carpenter's hammer. And it says on here, whosoever holdeth this hammer is a true and valued friend of Franklin Richards and the Fantastic Four. And it looks like it's an, I don't think it's supposed to be inflatable, but anyway, it's this blue plastic hammer. And Thor seems really pleased by this. He's like, zounds, 'tis a fine and fitting gesture on thy part. Johnny Storm is like, might not do much against Kang the Conqueror.
But it'll take down everything else this side of the Yancey Street, gang, says the Thing.
And Thor's happy, and he picks up Franklin, bounces him in the air. It's like, thou hast made Thor's heart sore this day, and for that I thank thee well.
You mean it? You really mean it?
Hey, I thought I had favorite uncle status around here.
Not no more, Hotshot. Someone just stole your thunder.
Wee, 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 wee.
And that is the end. All right, so a few words about this. Okay, there's a few things I don't like about it, and I'll just start with the things I don't like about it first. The story is really a cliche. It's a big cliche from beginning to end. But at the same time, this is like a classic Marvel story. This is exactly like something that could have happened back in 1966. We even get a big taste of this really over-the-top, florid, Stan Lee-style dialogue here. From the dialogue, which is so typically over-the-top, Stan Lee melodramatic, to the artwork, which in a lot of places is very, very reminiscent of Kirby. I'm kind of not crazy about the way Dan Jurgens draws the Fantastic Four. In particular, I really don't like the way he draws the Thing. But by and large, the artwork is really good in this issue. We have the Fantastic Four, you know, acting in character, which I think is really, really difficult to do. I know I've been pretty critical about Dan Jurgens' writing on the Thor series so far, and rightfully so, but it's a fun enough story. I think that it harkens back to the 1960s comics. We get some great dialogue from Dr. Doom here. I think, by and large, the characterizations are pretty spot on. The character of Salandra is just kind of a cardboard cutout. There's really not anything about her. This is probably the weakest part of the story, and really kind of the most predictable part of the story. There's a lot of the story that's just not that great, and maybe it's because we've seen this all before that it seems this way to me. Now, the other part of the story that really kind of doesn't work for me are the inks of Klaus Janson on Dan Jurgens' art. I like Dan Jurgens' art. He's a solid workman-like penciler. He's not the most exciting penciler in the world, but I enjoyed his work on Superman back in the day. And Klaus Janson, as I may have mentioned before, is not one of my favorite inkers. His style of inking works best on only a few artists. And it works okay on J.R. Jr. It works okay on Dan Jurgens. But you get an artist like, say, George Perez, as with the Marvel Super Special Beatles thing that they did together, and it just looks frickin' god-awful. I would like to have seen maybe a smoother style of inking on Dan Jurgens, and I think it would look better. Somebody like Tom Grummett. You can get some of these people who inked Jurgens on the Superman series when I really, really liked his art. I thought it was looking pretty good. Some of the layouts here are a little bit stiff and a little bit uninspired. And I understand, you know, the guy is writing and drawing this comic book, and it's a big issue. It's about 36 pages or something. So bigger than your average issue. But, you know, be that as it may, it still looks pretty good. So by and large, I think I like this annual better than a lot of the issues of the series that we've covered so far.
Anyway, so that'll be it for this episode. Thanks very much. Now, next issue, we're going to go back to Thor, God of Thunder. We've got 3 issues to catch up on, 8, 9, and 10. I think 11 might be out by the time we get to the end of that. So, of course, we'll be handling that as well. So, yeah, it'll be Thor, God of Thunder from here to next few weeks. And hope to see you then. Keep in mind that you can contact the show if you want to. We have an email address. The email address here is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And we also have a Facebook group that you can join and join the conversations that we've been having over there. And we would greatly appreciate it if you would drop by. So from Chicago, Illinois, this is Tom Harris saying, see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard.